Lead Festival Podcast Network, hosting a range of shows from food and drink, healthy living, music, and so much more. Supported by the Cora Foundation Enabling Neighbourhoods and Communities Grant, the Cora Foundation helps improve the lives of individuals and communities experiencing disadvantage all across Scotland and in developing countries. Hi everyone, I'm Carrie B and welcome to Love That Track. This is your brand new podcast focusing on great music and the reasons we love those songs. Welcome to Hall of Fame from Love That Track. Joining me on this episode is a London-born, Leith-based lass. Founder of the hair and beauty charity Stand Together Glam Together, it's none other than social entrepreneur and host of Erin Eats Everything, Miss Erin Cully. Okay, so thank you so much for joining me, Erin. Let's just start with one of your favourite musical memories in Leith.
My favourite musical memory? The first thing that comes to mind when I moved up to Edinburgh from London was exploring the shore, and we went to the granary, and I remember they had a band on in there, and I kind of felt like at the time it was rare that there was a lot of bands kind of performing in pubs around Leith. Like, it's, I don't feel like I don't see it loads, and I just remember it was me, my mum and dad having a couple of cocktails, having a good night, and they were just doing covers. But the good thing was, I think as people got more rowdy, we started like putting in requests. And my dad's request was, it's always the same, Folsom Prison Blues by Johnny Cash.
Classic.
And I remember that my dad was, you know, getting in his Johnny Cash vibes with that. And yeah, it was just like a really good night.
Quite a few places in Leith, I think, that do have live music now. But I'm sure, you know, like 5-10 years ago, you would probably struggle to see like a good upbeat covers band in Leith. They would usually all be tempted into town to the kind of pubs and clubs up there, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that was the thing. I think that's why we enjoyed it so much, because it was a bit of a nice surprise. We didn't know they were going to be on. We just happened to be in there and we saw this band setting up and we were like, oh, we were going to leave. But then we were like, oh no, we'll stay.
I love that kind of discovery of like, there's a good reason to stay. It's not just the cocktail. Not just the cocktail.
Yeah.
Awesome. Where would you go now to see music in Leith?
I know like the Biscuit Factory does gigs. And I feel like it's sometimes a bit of a forgotten venue just because of where it's situated in Bond. It's kind of more a little bit Bonnington kind of Leith, but it's such a cool venue. I just wish I could pick it up and just drop it a little bit closer to Leith. Or if not, it'd be like Hidden Door when it's done stuff in Leith.
I was seeing today that the
Carlton Hill
is going to Carlton Hill, which will be really exciting to see what they do there. Obviously, like this year, they were down at Granton at the Gasworks.
Yeah, I thought that was quite a bizarre venue.
But apparently it looked amazing. I didn't go.
I couldn't get tickets. It sold out.
It was too popular this year. They're just not. It's not culty at all anymore. It's so popular in Edinburgh. People know it's a good night, so they buy it before they know who's on.
And then the other one is that EH6 festival.
Yeah.
That's like a newer one. And I know like Callum Beattie and Irvin Welsh was doing a DJ set and stuff like that. And I would totally love to explore these things.
I'm definitely looking forward to Leith Festival this year. The return of Messenger Sound System, stuff like that.
Nice.
So live music in the park is going to be quite a nice summery thing to do down at the Links.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the Links just seems like such an obvious choice. And the only thing, the big things that ever happened there have been like Leith Festival or like Mella.
Yeah, I kind of really want Cocktail Week to come and do a week down in the Links. I'm just going to put that out there to the guys who run Cocktail Week. I want you guys to come down to the Links and put something on. It'd be amazing. All right, brilliant. Let's then have a little chat about your Love That Track Hall of Fame playlist pick. Why don't you tell me what that is?
So I've chosen Freedom 90 by George Michael. I love George.
Oh, George Michael.
R.I.P. I love George.
Yeah, there's a lot of love for George in this room, and there's only two of us.
Yeah, and it's not enough to fill this room.
It's not too enough much. To fill anywhere. There's so much love. So out of all of the George Michael tracks, why did you pick this one?
So I have to say that I've got quite a few short lists of like songs that I love by George Michael, and he does a great ballad. And yes, he does have some up-tempos, but they're not as many as the ballads, I feel. And I feel like everything about this song, the video, is just so iconic. And that's, I think, the encompassing of the song and the video together is what really gets me about this song.
So the video is the one that starts and he's got, it's the kind of close-up soft focus of his face, right? Is it that?
No, he's not in the video.
Oh, what's the video?
So that's the one that's got, you know, all the top models, Naomi Campbell, Cindy Crawford, Christy Turlington, you know, it's got all the top models. So that was the big thing as well, is that he didn't appear in this video. And there's so many iconic things. Like, I particularly love Naomi Campbell shots because she's like the more fun, dancey. She's got the headphones on and dancing. Cindy Crawford's in the bath, you know. It just like, it's just so much fun. And it's got like a couple of male models that I think were lesser known, but the actual five women that they had were all on the Vogue cover that year. And that's why I think with George not wanting to be in it, he knew to get out of doing it, he had to have something that was going to have great impact. And that's why he picked those girls for it. And I just think it's so iconic when you hear the da-da-da-da at the beginning, like you just know instantly it's freedom. And it's just, he's done so many things in it. Like, it's got so many different meanings. Like, he blew up, you know, the jukebox from Faith, his leather jacket he set on fire, the guitar. So it's got all this symbolism of him wanting to get rid of that old George. He's not that person anymore. I think he was going through quite a turbulent time with his record label as well, with what he wanted to do. So I kind of feel like this was a finger to everybody at the time.
And so do you really think that the video matches the lyrics? Does the song stand on its own without the video, or do you just see them as one thing now? Is it like one piece of art, the visual and the...
Well, to be honest, it's one of those that back in the day when this came out, music videos were so popular, and I feel like now as I've got older, you know, with all these new artists, I have no idea what their videos are or what they look like anymore. But when I listen to that song, because it's one of those ones on my Spotify that I listen to it so much that it comes up as my most liked song. And when Spotify creates a playlist for me, there's always loads of George Michael kicking about in it. And I don't always visualise the video instantly in the mind. I just like sit there and it makes me feel happy. It puts a smile on my face. His voice is just like silk. It's just so smooth. And it just makes me want to dance. Like, it makes me want to move around. And then I think about the video and then think about, like, oh yeah, like I'm totally Naomi Campbell, obviously. Like, dancing around, you know, working on my poses and things like that.
Naomi Campbell being fun.
Well, she looks fun in the video. I know that she gets a bad rep, but she does look fun.
She does
in the video.
She does. I do know the video. And I guess it's that kind of like, there's only a few videos, like you say, that really stand out that you remember. So you've got your Vogue or Thriller, and...
Vogue was a close second for me on the choice of songs. Well, it was.
There's definitely an era for making good videos, and it continued right up into this. It's interesting that you were saying that you think like it was a kind of turbulent time for him, because one of the things I think when I listen to this track is that he sounds like he's in a good place.
Yeah.
So that ability to be the artist and the performer and sell the song and the idea of what he's doing, behind all the symbolism, the burning of the leather jacket and whatever, but actually that's not what's going on with them at all.
Well, no, because I think because it is such an upbeat track, but I feel like sometimes if you listen to the words about what he's saying in the song, because he's obviously fighting his record label, the album it's from is the Listen Without Prejudice album, and obviously him coming out as gay, and I think, you know, or should I say him being outed as gay, that I feel like it was just kind of, he threw everything at it. And then the big thing of him not being in the video himself as well was a bit like, you can't make me do this. You're making me do this because you're my record label, because I'm signed to a contract, but I'm not going to be the face of this if you're going to treat me this way.
So if you had to pinpoint it, why would you say you love this track?
I feel like it's hard to not love anything that he does, because his voice means so much, but I feel like it makes me feel instantly happy. And I think that's one of the big things. And it reminds me of like my sister, for instance, who is the person that I kind of got introduced to George Michael. I remember it used to be on a Sunday, my mum would do the cleaning and it would always be a day where the telly was off and the music would go on. And my mum was like, she's one of those ones, you know, when it came to Mother's Day, you know, they always have those power ballad albums that always have like Celine Dion, you know, My mum loved those.
Oh.
Oh, she loved them. Like, my mum, she was the prime target audience. But now and again, like, my dad would get a shot on the Sunday Music, and, like, my sister, and I remember the Ladies and Gentlemen album was the one that it was, and my dad quite liked it as well. So that got played, and it just gives me, like, childhood memories on the Sunday, and just having so much fun as well with it, and just dancing around, you know, just everybody singing along, and, you know, we don't necessarily need to talk to each other. We're all getting on, but we're in a good place.
Yeah, that, like, it can reach across generations. There's nothing offensive about the music to any of the generation's ears. So he's always had those cool sounds.
Yeah.
But also, he's got an amazing voice. So he sings in tune, and it sounds like a voice you want to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's these great songs. So there's the classic melodies, and the like songwriting harm like techniques are employed. So
yeah.
Even older generations can't get on board with it, because it sounds familiar to almost everybody.
Yeah.
There's a real kind of hook. It's a clever artist that can do that.
Because I feel like most people, if they're going to think, like, when you think of George Michael, what song do you think of? Do you mean, is there one that pops out to you?
So Last Christmas, obviously, is my...
yeah.
Is
classic.
Not George Michael. I get that people don't write in. We're getting the comments about it. But I have, obviously, the kind of his birthday being in Christmas and him passing around Christmas is so intrinsically linked with that song. But that's a song that I had in my early childhood. Then it was covered when I was a teenager and was out again. And so obviously, whenever a cover comes out, the original comes back out and is played more and more again. So I feel like that has just always been with me. And it's a song that I've taught to students, had in choirs, sung live, done at karaoke probably.
Yeah, I think I've done a school choir of that, like, that song as well.
So I think for me, like, when I think George, that's my first thing. And I think What I'm First, probably. But when you're saying Ladies and Gentlemen, I can't even remember if it's the same album, but Jesus to a Child is just, I think, it's hard when you talk about picking a track or picking a list. I mean, you could go on for days, but it always would be on one of my playlists of, like, these are the best tracks that I've ever listened to.
Yeah.
There's something so special about, I think, again, the way he delivers the classic song, but in quite a modern sound.
Yeah.
At the time, I mean, it was 80s, so it doesn't sound so modern now, I guess. It sounds like a classic
ballad.
Well,
there was no synth.
No. And he could have done, I suppose. You know, yeah. But there's a real timelessness about some of these songs.
They're like, they all feel classics that will never grow old. That's the thing. And I think, especially with something like Freedom Night, because I feel like ballads can last easily because there is a certain way a ballad goes, and that's why they're kind of everlasting. But up-tempo tracks usually fit the era that it's in, you know, that has a distinctive sound. That's how you can recognise an 80s track or maybe a 70s track. But his just, they all, I feel like, are timeless. And I feel like if you played Freedom 90, I'd feel like most people would know it. Like, I feel like it is just so iconic as well. And people won't maybe necessarily know the video. Younger people today might have never seen it. But I feel like they would definitely have heard the song being played. Like, I hear it in the car, like, on the radio.
Yeah, it's still definitely one of those tracks that's still played. And I think that, and it's not the only one, though. You know, there is a whole catalogue of George Michael and Wham tracks, obviously.
Yeah.
That are just always going to be there, I think, for future generations to discover as well. It's so lovely when you got to be part of that, growing up with that, and that's your music, and you know that that's going to stick around.
Yeah.
Wonder what it'll be like if Ed Sheeran will still be there. And
well, this is it. You just don't know. And, like, some people do surprise you that you don't think are going to last, and they do.
Before we go, Erin, we've talked about the memories and how you got into the band, why you love this track, and George Michael generally. What do you think the emotion this track is trying to express? Do you think it's trying to make people happy? Or do you think it's a warning? Is it a kind of call to arms? Is
that
a...
It makes me feel happy, but I don't think that that's probably what the intention was of the song. I think you can tell about a power struggle, and I think it's him basically kind of going, I am who I am, and you can't make me do what I don't want to do. So I do think it is kind of like that fighter track, you know, I won't be teared down, regardless of if I'm tied to this music contract, regardless of if you think I should act like I was in Wham or have looked like I did in the Faith video, I will do what I want to do. And I like that as well, even though I didn't know that initially, that's what the song was about when I was younger. I always just used to feel really happy, wanted to dance to it. And it always makes me smile over the years. But after, you know, especially after he died and all the documentaries that came out, you know, about it and really shone the light on that track specifically, because they went and spoke to all the models and everything like that that are in it, I took on a new meaning on it actually being that kind of like, get up, don't let anyone put you down kind of thing.
Is that difference between the kind of passive listening, which is the emotion that you feel, the things you think, you know, you think about the memories, you feel happy, versus like the active, when you're trying to like pick things out. So when you know something about a song and then you try and hear that in the lyric, or you try and hear it in the delivery.
Yep.
And you're actively looking for those moments. I think that really, it always kind of it makes a piece of music sound different when you listen to it thereafter. Remember So when I was training as a vocal teacher, one of the instructors that I got to mentor me pointed at one of his pet peeves.
Right.
With a vocalist in a band that I really love. And he didn't do it deliberately. He didn't know it wasn't like a dig or anything. We were talking about technique and breath control. And so he pointed out that this particular artist, and I'm not going to say who it is because it ruins it for you if you're a fan.
Yeah.
But this particular artist has a gasp.
Yeah.
At the end of every single line.
And now you can't unhear
it. And now I can't unhear it in any of the songs. Or when somebody pointed out to me the frequency of the insert of a letter H in kind of modern R&B pop, so Christina's and Beyonce's. Yeah. So it's like, I'm happy. And you're like, why is there an H in the middle of that? Because I'm.
Yeah.
And it's obviously to do with the sound and the resonance, but once you hear those personal twerks and queeks of a voice, you can't unhear it. And I think it's the same when you know something about a song, when you know something about the intention.
Yep.
You can't unhear it and it changes
the way It does. Yeah. And it's a bit like, unless the song is totally in your face, like for this, me feeling like this is kind of like a fighter track, I then instantly thought of like Christina Aguilera, but it was called Fighter. She couldn't say the word fighter enough. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of shoved in your face a lot more. Whereas I feel there was subtleties to it. And I think the fact that he shoved all these beautiful women in a video, it kind of was helping glaze over to the outside of, you know, I'm putting out this really great track that's really fun. Not everybody's necessarily going to know the meanings underneath it, because I've just put these amazing women for you to look at, not necessarily pay too much attention to the words. But then it's got that punch as well. It packs a punch.
Do you think he would do this, or do you think he would get away with that now?
I don't know, because I feel like it wasn't unusual to have a supermodel in a video. Like, you know, like Uptown Girl, what was that, Claudia Schiffer or something, that was in that. So it wasn't unusual, but to have five of them that had just been on a Vogue cover, I think was a first. And then when I think of somebody maybe now that's done something similar, I was thinking of Taylor Swift, Bad Blood. You know how she had loads of celebs in the video, like loads of different people. And I did really like that video, and I thought the track was quite kind of catchy, but I did become quite fascinated with it because you want to know who's in it.
Yeah.
And what their role is in it. Do you know who gets more camera time than somebody else? That's me just being like nosy. But again, I don't think it has the same impact as what George's one has, but people will replicate these things. Like, you know, there'll be somebody that does it first, and then there'll be other people that will try and do it.
Their version of it.
But it's never really the same as the original, the person that kind of set that off. So as much as I didn't mind Taylor Swift's one, it wasn't the same. And I feel like he wouldn't want to do that again because he was an original. He would never want to...
He wouldn't try and repeat the things.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Like, the only thing I can imagine is at a concert, if he managed to get all the models together and they would have all came out. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe something like that on a live setting, I could imagine... He did that. Maybe he did, and I just don't know. But, like, I can imagine him doing that, and that would maybe be about it. He wouldn't just keep going over it.
I think on that note, we should finish so I can go to YouTube and see if that ever happened.
See if that's actually real.
Because that's such an amazing idea. And if they didn't do that, why didn't they do that?
I know.
They must have done that at some stage. Thank you so much, Erin, for joining me today. That has been such a lovely look at a track that I hope everybody out there loves. Check it out on the Love That Track Spotify playlist.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to hit the subscribe button and you'll be notified whenever a new episode is posted.
Leith Festival Podcast Network. If you'd like to know more about Leith Festival, simply visit leithfestival.com. You can also hit the support button to make a donation or find out about volunteering opportunities and other ways that you can help us to help the community.